D. James Kennedy Ministries presents Truths That Transform.
Though the only choice the abortionist ever give anybody is Tuesday or Friday, when do you want to have the abortion?
Over the years, we've now seen a reduction by 73% of all the nation's abortion clinics have closed. That's over 1,400, and they've not reopened.
This is Truths That Transform.
Welcome to Truths That Transform, a viewer-supported program of D. James Kennedy Ministries. My name is Frank Wright. Well, this is the first edition of Truths That Transform for 2016. We hope your new year is off to a great start. A new year, of course, is a time of beginnings, a time of fresh starts, and it brings to mind new life. Yet January is also a time when we remember those who were never given a chance at life. In a few weeks, we'll mark the 43rd anniversary of the Supreme Court's infamous Roe v. Wade decision, which led to the deaths of over 50 million children in America. Joining us today is Rebecca Kiesling, an attorney and a speaker with a unique and powerful perspective on this issue. Rebecca, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. Well, you were adopted as a very young child, as an infant, as a newborn, and yet later in life you made a fascinating and maybe even shocking discovery. Tell us a little bit about that.
At 18, I learned that I was conceived when my birth mother was abducted at knife point by a serial rapist. She wanted to meet me, was happy to meet me, and then later learned that she would have aborted me if it had been legal. She was pro-choice for the first 6 years of knowing her. And she said she actually went to two back alley abortionists and I was almost aborted. So I really owe my birth to the law being there to protect me.
Your birth and your life today. You have a family of your own, correct?
Yes, yes. And just a couple of years ago, on my birthday, she called to wish me happy birthday and to tell me that my grandma died on my birthday. After a long heart-to-heart before we hung up, she stopped me and she said, Rebecca, I just want to say, I'm so glad I had you. Decades later.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. Now, let me ask you this question, though. I read something that you had written along these lines. When someone makes that statement, that there should be exceptions for rape and incest, how does that make you feel personally?
It's like saying that I think your mother should have been able to abort you. If I had my way, you'd be dead right now.
Everybody but you, then. We should protect everybody but you.
Yeah, that I'm worth less.
President Obama was quoted as saying that if one of his daughters made a bad decision and got pregnant, he wouldn't want them to be punished with a child. What is it about our culture today that sees a child as a burden and not a gift? Even a child that is conceived in really tragic circumstances.
And that is part of it. Even pro-life people think that a child like me would be a punishment to a rape victim. But I ask people, you know, who created me? And there's Christians who have to stop and think about that. Like, what are you thinking about?
There are people watching this program who think that allowing abortion for rape and incest is a compassionate position, but they're missing something really significant.
Yeah, I mean, they are missing the humanity of the child. But, you know, I will address that issue about the woman because there's a myth that's perpetuated that most rape victims would want an abortion, and that's not true. They choose abortion at half the rate of the average unplanned pregnancy, between 15 to 25% abort compared to over 50% in your average unplanned pregnancy. 25% choose adoption. So they're 25 times more likely to choose adoption because nationwide only 1% choose adoption, and over half of them choose to raise her child. Not the rapist baby, that's her child.
So you have an amazing combination of perspectives because of your own personal experience, your own legacy, your mom's legacy, and yours as well. but also your legal training. You know, one of the things that people lack today is hope on this issue. It's 43 years since Roe versus Wade. Give us some hope here from either a legal perspective or a generational perspective or an educational one.
And we have a 5-state study that shows that, you know, over 90% people believe that abortion's immoral, that it's wrong. And wow. So if you're spending money to convince people that, they already know it, but they're having abortions anyway, and they're not voting pro-life. And then you have, depending on the state, you know, 50 to 60% who call themselves pro-life. But if you then ask them, do you think abortion should be illegal, the numbers plummet. Mm. And the people who think abortion should be illegal are the same people who don't make exceptions. Mm. And so I think that if the pro-life movement were more strategic in convincing people, no exceptions, we would help people understand why this is about protection.
Right.
This is why it should be criminal, why it should be illegal. And I think that instead of just having the choose life message, we need to get back to a discussion of why we're supposed to rescue those who are being led away to death and why we need to protect by law, like I was protected.
What should we be doing with our elected officials? What should we be doing with those who have regulatory authority over abortion clinics? How should we be engaging the political culture?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you have to vote. And it's important to get involved because you can make a huge impact. I have so many opportunities because I'm involved politically to speak to these legislators one-on-one. And I'm able to change a lot of hearts and minds. And so get involved, and then need to make sure that we hold their feet to the fire, that they understand that there are consequences. If they introduce a rape exception, there need to be consequences.
Rebecca, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as you've just seen and heard, when we talk about abortion, we're not talking about anonymous fetuses. We are talking about eliminating the lives of real human beings like Rebecca. Yet tens of millions of children have been killed this way in America since 1973. How did we get to the point where we've become so callous with human life? And what rationalizations allowed our culture to descend into this awful and bloody abyss? My friend and mentor, Dr. D. James Kennedy, opens a window that sheds the light of truth on these questions in his message, Life, an Inalienable Right.
It was in 1973 that the Supreme Court passed the infamous Roe v. Wade decision. And in that, they said that unborn children are not persons and are not deserving of the protection of our Constitution and our law, and thus the American Holocaust was unleashed. Our Declaration of Independence declares that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And as Dr. Francis Schaeffer said in one of his last messages, which was given right here in this pulpit, that the right of life is more fundamental and basic than the right even of liberty, or the pursuit of happiness, or any other right for that matter. Indeed, if you are lying in your coffin, you do not care how many shackles and chains they have wrapped around you, nor do you care how much money you have in your bank account. Without life, nothing else means anything at all. It is good to remember the context in which that decision was made in 1973. We had just come through the decade of the 60s. All of the moral values, traditions, and rules and laws of life that had governed Western civilization for 2,000 years had been, it seemed, suddenly jettisoned in one decade. And acting in that moral vacuum, the Supreme Court moved to provide what they felt was a solution to the problems created by the blatant and epidemic immorality in America. And so the sin which was engendered in the sexual revolution was to be covered up by the abortion revolution. Carol Everett, who ran an abortion clinic where she supervised the killing of over 35,000 babies, said the most frequently asked question by young ladies was, "Is this a baby?" And the uniform answer was, "No. It is just a glob of tissue, like a tumor or an appendix." Well, not according to the Bible and not according to science. The Bible is very clear. It constantly refers to the unborn child precisely as that, an unborn child. The same words are used to describe the child in the womb and outside of the womb. In Greek, it is brephos for the unborn child and brephos for a young child lying in a manger. Or the term huios, which is used for son, for one that is born, is also used for one in the womb. In the Old Testament, it is the word yeled, which is used for both, or also the word geber, which means either the child in the womb or the child outside of the womb. Constantly there are used personal pronouns. It is I, or me, or thee. It is always referring to a person and not to a thing. Furthermore, we're told about both Jeremiah and John the Baptist that they were sanctified from their mother's womb, or consecrated, ordained as a prophet to the nation. From the mother's womb, you don't consecrate or sanctify a thing, a glob of tissue, but a person. And the babe in Elizabeth's womb leaped for joy. Things don't have joy. When Mary came carrying Jesus in her womb, no, the Bible is clear. It is a person, not a thing, that is in the womb. It is only by lies and deceptions and deceit that they are able to keep this ghastly thing going. A lawyer told me after the first service, and I think this is very interesting. According to Florida law, a corporation is a person, but a child in the womb is not. What hypocrisy indeed is there? Abortion is based upon ignorance. I think it's interesting that the word fetus is constantly used. What is fetus? Fetus is a perfectly good Latin word that simply means an unborn child to anybody that knows Latin. But to the average American, they might as well call it blah, blah, blah. They don't know what fetus means. I think it's also fascinating that Martin Luther felt that it was absolutely essential, if Christianity was going to flourish in Germany, to translate the scriptures from Latin, which was the only language they were in, into the vernacular of German in order that people might know what was going on. But the abortionists insist on translating the word baby from the vernacular into Latin, fetus, in order that people won't know what's going on. Because deception is essential for the abortion industry. And I would like to say to anybody here who might be so-called pro-choice, though the only choice the abortionists ever give anybody is Tuesday or Friday, when do you want to have the abortion? But any of you that may be pro-choice, I just want to say to you this, you ought to get down on your knees and thank God that your mother wasn't pro-choice. I recall a woman had an air bubble injected into her womb in order to carefully be able to delineate the walls of the uterus. But she found that when she lay down at night, the bubble covered the mouth of the baby and the baby cried and kept her awake. She complained to her doctor. If such a bubble were over the face of a baby being aborted, it would scream bloody murder. For that is precisely what it is. And there would be an end to abortion. How long will this Holocaust go on?
As Dr. Kennedy just explained, the abortion epidemic in America is a modern-day Holocaust. But all is not lost. The pro-life movement has been peacefully battling abortion for 43 years since Roe v. Wade. And though you don't often hear about it, the movement has had tangible success. There's still a long way to go, and even one abortion is too many. But as you're about to see, bit by bit, the cause of life is gaining ground.
You know, when I started back in the mid-80s, everyone would ask me, why are you even involved with that? Abortion is a settled issue in this country. Nobody even talks about it anymore.
Cheryl Sullinger is the senior vice president of Operation Rescue in Wichita, Kansas.
That may have been somewhat true back at that particular time. But over the course of time, things have changed and more people are becoming pro-life.
The battle over abortion is ultimately the battle over whether children can live or not. And there has been progress made in recent years. For example, the CDC reports that in 1990, there were 1.6 million abortions. But by 2010, that number had dropped to 1.1 million. Thus, hundreds of thousands of lives are being saved every year from abortion, largely through pro-life efforts. Troy Newman, the president of Operation Rescue, considers himself a missionary to the unborn.
I'm asking for children to be saved. I'm asking for abortion clinics to close. I'm asking for moms to be spared the horror and trauma of knowing that they killed their baby. These are questions or prayers that we ask God that I think He readily wants to give us.
Troy Newman played a pivotal role in helping to launch the shocking video exposés produced by David DeLeiden to document Planned Parenthood's practice of selling baby body parts.
This is about prosecutions, and I think that's why David came to us right from the very beginning. He knew that Operation Rescue gets results. We close abortion clinics, we put abortionists behind bars. That's our goal.
Tell me about abortion clinics being closed through the efforts of pro-life people.
Well, it's really neat, because in 1991, there was 2,176 abortion clinics. Way too many. We thought this was just a mountain that could be never cast into the sea. And that's when I got involved, and I got arrested like a lot of people did, sitting in front of the doors of abortion clinics.
Troy Newman has been arrested a number of times, but he's always been exonerated from all the charges.
But I remember there was a day where I was in a jail in Southern California, and I said, you know, it's the abortionists that belong behind bars. And when we got out, we revamped Operation Rescue to an organization that demands justice. So we started analyzing different abortion clinics, different abortionists, found out what they were doing wrong. All of them were killing babies. Some were killing mothers. Some were botching abortions. Some were violating Medicare standards and stealing. Some were even raping women on the operating room table. And we put a lot of these out of business.
Some of these clinics have been engaged in extremely shoddy practices that have actually endangered the lives of women. And in fact, in some cases, taken the lives of women. We know women have died from abortions at Planned Parenthood. And we've documented that. Operation Rescue, this is Cheryl. I filed a number of complaints against abortionists over the years. In fact, we probably have about 100 open complaints at any given time. And we've been relatively successful. A number of abortionists have had their licenses revoked, suspended. They've had to surrender their medical licenses based on complaints that have come from this office.
And over the years, we've now seen a reduction by 73% of all the nation's abortion clinics have closed. That's over 1,400, and they've not reopened. So the number's down now to about 545 abortion clinics from 2,176. We're clearly winning. On top of that, the pregnancy care centers, these Christ-centered pregnancy care centers that are not given government funds, staffed by by Jesus-loving Christians that want to help women and give them true choices. These clinics now outnumber abortion clinics 5-1 across the United States.
Wow. So we are winning, actually.
It's absolutely clear that we're winning. Additionally, the only real way to determine whether or not we're winning this fight is the number of babies that are saved. So all the trends are pointing to the fact that the abortion industry is a dying business. It's in a death spiral. It's going down the way of the VHS tape, the 8-track tape, and everything else. I mean, you know, slavery, cannibalism, etc. I believe that, the Lord said to my Lord, sit thou at my right hand till I make thine enemies your footstool. The enemies of God are continually being made the footstool again and again and again.
Excellent. Tell us about this particular clinic.
This building used to be an abortion clinic, operated for over 25 years. We believe they killed over 50,000 children just here, exactly where we're sitting. This is an abortion room, or was an abortion room. We close abortion clinics, and I love doing it. I love it when an abortion clinic closes. And not only did it close, but we replaced it with a life-affirming center. Now we're launching our efforts to close other abortion clinics from an abortion clinic that we closed. I have a board member that said when we bought it, and we obviously had to completely remodel it, this place just was the smell of death. But one of my board members says, if the Lord can redeem buildings, He can redeem people. If He can redeem people, He can redeem a nation. And so we start one building at a time, one person at a time, one nation at a time.
The fact is, 43 years of activism and engagement on the part of pro-life Christians has saved the lives of perhaps millions. Those with a biblical pro-life ethic are pro-life across the board, rejecting violence in favor of persuasion. And it's working. And we have a new resource available that will help you gain ground in that battle of ideas. Here's my very dear friend, Jennifer Kennedy Cassidy, to tell us more about it. Happy New Year, Jennifer. Welcome.
Thanks, Frank. Happy New Year to you, too. Life is our most fundamental right. Without life, all our other rights are irrelevant. And yet, in our nation, which the Declaration of Independence tells us is based upon the God-given right to life, our legal system has allowed the deliberate killing of millions. But as you've heard today, the truth is making an impact. By some estimates, 500,000 children a year fewer are now being killed in abortions than in 1990. My father passionately believed in protecting human life. He knew that God's word requires us to stand in defense of the least among us, and he spoke out passionately and persuasively from his pulpit. We've put together 6 of his most powerful messages on this issue into a new book for the Kennedy Collection called Fearfully and Wonderfully Made. These 6 messages make a powerful case from the Bible, from history, and from reason for the immorality of abortion. And we want you to have a copy of this important book. Read it yourself, and even more importantly, share it with others to help spread the message of life. We'll send it to you as our thanks when you make a generous donation to the ongoing work of this ministry. Simply write to us at Box 6085, Albert Lea, Minnesota, 56007, or call toll-free 888-334-9762. Or go online to djameskennedy.org. You saw a short portion of one of these messages earlier in this program. The full version of that powerful message, plus 5 others that feature my dad's eloquent, biblical, resounding preaching, are contained in this hardcover book. And if you're able to give a donation of $40 or more, we'll send you the new book plus the DVD versions of these messages in a 6-DVD set. That's the hardcover book plus the 6-DVD or 6-CD companion set, Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, if you're able to give a generous donation of $40 or more to help us do the work of this ministry. We are on the verge of launching a major life initiative for the purpose of protecting life. The first phase will connect pregnant women who need help with crisis pregnancy centers equipped to assist them. But we need your help in order to be able to do this important work, as well as continuing our other outreaches. So please, don't delay. Simply write to us at Box 6085, Albert Lea, Minnesota, 56007. Or call toll-free, 888-334-9762. Or go online to djameskennedy.org.
We live in a nation that has foolishly embraced infanticide under the nonsensical banner of women's health. While even the most ardent abortion advocates once claimed a desire to keep the barbaric practice safe, legal, and rare, many are now waiving their abortions as an act of pride. On the social media site Twitter, the hashtag #ShoutYourAbortion recently became a trending topic. One feminist writer tweeted this, "My abortion was in 2010. The career I've built since then fulfills me." While the pro-life movement has made great strides and the abortion rate is at an all-time low, the consciences of those in the pro-abortion movement seem to be hardening. Only God himself can break through hardened hearts, but it's incumbent upon us to tell the world what he says. In the Proverbs, he says, "All those who hate me love death." And God's word continually affirms the humanity of unborn children. The psalmist says, "Children are a gift of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is a reward." He tells God, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works." And John the Baptist leaps in the womb for joy when he is in the presence of the unborn Lord Jesus. You know, there are those who would try to discourage us, claiming that our work in the Lord, peacefully defending life, is a waste. But don't you believe them. Every life is a precious gift of God, and his truth is breaking through to a hardened nation. We must not shrink back now when real progress is being made. Thanks for being with us on Truths That Transform. We'll see you next time.
Next week on Truths That Transform.
There is a great clash, as you know, in our country today between the concept of sanctity of life and the concept of quality of life.
What's being killed in an abortion is a human being.
Live Action is a pro-life organization leading the social media movement for our country, exposing the truth about abortion, about what's happening to the pre-born child, and advocating for the rights of the defenseless.
That's next week. Today's program is available on DVD for your gift to this ministry of any amount. Please call, write, or log on to our website today. This has been a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries.